I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Skills, not pills, are what's needed for the rising number of people in their 20s being diagnosed with mental illnesses today. That's according to Dr. Meg Jay, who is an expert in that space between 20 and 30, a time of uncertainty, personally and professionally. Well, Meg says many clients that she sees in this age group don't have disorders that need to be treated, they have problems that need to be solved. And she's written a new book that sets out the ways to use this decade to be one of transformation and not just struggle. It's called The 20-Something Treatment, a revolutionary remedy for an uncertain age. And Dr. Meg Jay joins me now. Hi there.
Hi, Jesse.
How hard are you swimming upstream on this one, Meg? it's a rare point of view. Most of the coverage we get are of people who are very pleased to have been diagnosed and feel like they've finally unlocked a riddle that's been plaguing them throughout their childhood.
Well, I think that certainly is the case for some people, but we have to remember that that's going to be the case for a minority of people, that, you know, the majority of human beings cannot have, do not have DSM disorders, especially 20-somethings. It's a very difficult time. So many of them are struggling with how to work, how to love, how to make friends, how to be social, how to live their lives. And it definitely makes people feel depressed and anxious and stressed and even suicidal. But, you know, I think what most 20-somethings need are skills and not just pills. Some people, absolutely, medication is helpful and even a lifesaver. But even people on medication also need skills. There's no mental health disorder for which can be treated by pills alone.
Huh. Is it particularly hard to be in your 20s in 2024 compared to, say, 1984 or 1974?
That's a good question. I think I like your comparison points. Compared to 1974, I'd say it's very different. That, you know, 74 was a long time ago now, but back then, you know, people had career security, maybe they owned a home, probably had a partner, might already have children. So there was a lot more certainty and stability for 20-somethings then. In the 21st century, the 20-something years are marked by uncertainty and instability, that career isn't defined, partnership isn't defined, self isn't defined, where you're going to live isn't defined. And we know that uncertainty makes people feel anxious and stressed. So that's a lot of what's happening with 20-somethings. They've got problems they're trying to solve. Who am I going to be? Where am I going to work? Is anyone going to love me? And that can make people feel very anxious and stressed and depressed, but it doesn't necessarily mean you have a mental health disorder.
Yeah, you're pointing to quite systemic things there. So you're not saying it's the fault of these people in their 20s who are coming to me for overdiagnosing themselves and over-reliance on pills and not having the willingness to work on some of the skills that might get them out of this spot. You really see this as them being, I don't know if you'd use the word victim, but certainly a result of their circumstances and their generation's circumstances.
Yeah, absolutely. The 20-somethings who come to me, they're not saying, hey, I want the easy way out, give me some pills. That's not what they're saying at all. Usually they actually come to me and feel relieved that I don't think there's something wrong with them, that I don't think that they're disordered. Many of them are on medications that they, you know, started because of their GP put them on the medication. And those appointments, often you don't have time to really ask, hey, what's going on in your life that maybe is causing you to feel anxious or depressed? And so they feel quite relieved that even if medication is helping them now, that they may not need it forever. So I absolutely don't see it as coming from 20-somethings. They're doing what their doctors are telling them to do, or they're listening to what the media is saying about them, which oftentimes can be quite critical.
Yeah. Tell me about Henry. You write about him in the book. Henry showed up with a complete checklist of what he thought was wrong with him before your first session.
Well, that's pretty common. So, and that's, one of the things I've learned. I've been working with 20 somethings or specializing in them for 25 years. And I have a checklist, before your first session, check all the things you're trying to work on. So it could be career or school or relationships, sexuality, identity, family problems, trauma. The list goes on and on. And most 20 somethings check easily five, if not 10 things on the list before our first session. And the point being that, very few of them fall into some neat diagnostic category of I clearly have this, or, this brain problem is my problem. Most of them have stressors that are what we call situational. So they're outside of their brains and their bodies. It's they're trying to adjust to their first jobs or their first relationships, their first cross-country moves, their first years at university, and all that can be very stressful. There's a lot of uncertainty. The brain interprets that as danger. And so it makes people feel very uncomfortable. But that doesn't mean that there's something wrong with young adults. In fact, we know that even though young adults can meet criteria for mental health disorders very easily, that most of them tend to feel better and get better by their 30s and beyond. So I think we need to help young adults understand, even if you meet criteria for a mental health disorder in your 20s, this is not necessarily a life sentence, especially if you're focusing on skills, not just pills.
I love this quote from your book. You say, "In the history of civilization, uncertainty isn't new, but it is new for 20-somethings. Why is uncertainty such a novelty for them?"
Well, if you think about it, most young adults go through the first 15, 20 years of their lives that they remember being in school. So school tends to be highly structured. There are syllabi that tell you what to do and when to do it and how to get an A and what happens, if you don't turn in this or do turn in that. And then you graduate from school and head out into adulthood, and suddenly there are no syllabi, there are no grades. It's all up to you to figure out what are you going to do, when are you going to do it, and what is success to you. So that's a lot of uncertainty. And like I said, uncertainty is not new. That's been the case, certainly for 21st century 20 somethings for a good two, three generations, but it's still new to every new crop of 20-year-olds or 23-year-olds who graduate from school into life. And so that's something that they have to learn to figure out is what do I do with all this uncertainty? How do I manage my feelings? And how do I start to create my own structure for my life?
That might be particularly the case for this generation of 20-somethings because they really have had their hand held through a lot of their childhood and adolescence.
Well, it's interesting. Everybody says that when I go on the radio or on television. I will say some have, but I've definitely worked with many, many 20-somethings who would have given anything for a helicopter parent and didn't
Okay.
have anything. It didn't have anything near to that. So, whether you had that or not, you were probably in school where life was highly structured. And then, you get out into adulthood. There aren't any right answers about where to work or who to love or where to live. That's modern life, but it's still stressful, especially when you're first learning to sort that out.
So, do we need an age-specific approach to diagnosis then?
I think we do. I'm, not going to hold my breath and wait for it, but the 20-something treatment is really about an age-specific approach to thinking about mental health and working with young adults because the DSM or the ICD, the diagnostic manuals around the world don't take adult development into account at all. So, key features of some disorders that would be very concerning in 45-year-olds are very common in 25-year-olds, feeling devastated after a breakup or a problem with a friend, or can't stop thinking about what other people think of you. If that's going on when you're 45 and it's been going on for 25 years, maybe you have social anxiety disorder. But if you're doing that at 25, that sounds like being 25. And so, interestingly, about half of 20-somethings meet criteria for social anxiety disorder, which means the criteria are not appropriate for 20-somethings because, half of people cannot have this disorder. It's just telling us that it's very normal to feel worried about what other people think and whether people will like us and talking or presenting in public or talking at a cocktail party. That sounds like being a 20-something.
I mean, Yeah, I can see your logic there. It's not possible for half a population to have a disorder, although, I mean, we know that mental health, well, we hear reports and evidence that mental health is much worse for younger people. So have you looked at whether that was the case, say, in the 70s or 80s? Would those 20-somethings have qualified as having a disorder as well? Or once again, I guess the question is whether there is something different about this generation.
Yeah, I wouldn't say it's this generation. We haven't been collecting that particular data as far back as the 70s and 80s. The DSM was different back then, but certainly for the last 20 or 30 years, I've been doing this for 25 years, and that's why the 20s have been the time in your life when you're most likely to feel anxious, most likely to feel depressed, most likely to struggle with substances, most likely to feel suicidal. So 20-somethings have been struggling for quite some time. We're talking about it more, which is great, but it's not necessarily great if the conclusion to each conversation needs to be, what is my diagnosis? What is the medication that I need? Because a lot of what young adults are struggling with, it's situational, it's normal, and we need to give them hope and let them know that it's very common to struggle in your 20s, but by and large, mental health improves as we go about life, as we get better at life, as life gets better, mental health also gets better.
I'm speaking with Dr. Meg Jay. Her book is called The 20-Something Treatment, A Revolutionary Remedy for an Uncertain Age. Meg, what is the nocebo effect?
The nocebo effect is the opposite of the placebo effect. So we all know the placebo effect is it's the power of positive expectations. I mean, we associate it with a sugar pill, but it really means if someone thinks they're going to get better, they're more likely to get better. The flip side of that is the nocebo effect, which is the power of negative expectations. And that goes along with what I was referring to earlier, some of the problems of receiving a diagnosis when you're in your 20s, that oftentimes 20-somethings who have situational problems, so they're going through a breakup, they're stressed about their new job, they're in a new city and they're trying to make friends and feeling very anxious about it. Once they receive a diagnosis, they often start to think of themselves as different and damaged and doomed. And that can also start to limit what do you read? How do you think about yourself? How do you talk about yourself? Who do you hang out with? And so oftentimes I'll have 20-somethings say, oh, I read online or I saw on TikTok, I have this diagnosis. I didn't even know I had that. Now I'm going to have this for the rest of my life. And so that's when I have to do some psychoeducation around, you know, even if you meet criteria for that now, so, you know, we were talking about social anxiety disorder earlier, about 50% of 20-somethings meet criteria for that, and more than half of those get, you know, no longer do over time. So to help 20-somethings understand that you can use the power of positive expectations and tap into hope. So young adults who have hope are less likely to feel anxious and depressed, and more likely to use healthy behaviors or work toward feeling better. And that means, you know, to tap in to the skills and not just pills.
So let's take a look at your 20-something treatment. It involves education, experience, and expectations. The first one there, what are the most or some of the most important things that people in their 20s should educate themselves about? And is TikTok a good source of education?
Well, it depends. I mean, of course, you know, there's everything is on TikTok, both great information and not great information. So, you know, I think you have to be careful who you're listening to and making sure you're listening to some trusted sources. I think the biggest thing for 20-somethings to understand is what you and I are talking about right now, that it's normal to struggle. It's common to struggle. That doesn't mean there's something wrong with you. And even if you meet criteria for a disorder, most 20-somethings get better over time. That's also the expectations piece of giving people, you know, not just help, but hope. The experience piece, I think most people would probably be surprised to know that the biggest driver of change, even in therapy, is experience. It's what happens outside of the therapy room. So I think if we're talking about mental health and someone says, I have a disorder, they're thinking either, well, I might need some medication or I need a therapist. And I mean, I'm a therapist, so I would love for everyone to have a good therapist if they want one. But we know that therapy does not scale. It's not affordable and accessible for most people. That cannot be the solution worldwide. The good news is most people don't need a therapist, and that the biggest driver of change in therapy is outside experience. So that means getting into a better job, getting into a better relationship, learning how to be a friend or make a friend, cooking more, moving more, braving intimacy, learning how to make difficult decisions, that the things that we do outside of therapy are actually what drives change the most.
Is there a trick to knowing the difference between uncertainty and anxiety?
That's a great question. I actually often encourage clients to replace the word anxiety with uncertainty and see what that does for how they're thinking about themselves or their situation. So we were talking earlier about social anxiety, and I say, well, what if you think of it as social uncertainty, that you're unsure about whether this person is your friend or whether you know how to talk in a cocktail party or whether you feel comfortable presenting at work. And I think when you do that, it begs the question of what are the experiences that you need? What are the skills that you need so that you can feel more certain, so that you can feel more sure of yourself or more sure of your relationships? And it leaves an opening there for growth and change rather than this label that there's, you know, I'm anxious and that's why I'm doing this versus, hey, I'm feeling uncertain and what do I need to feel more confident or competent?
Yeah. And on that, I think this is advice that probably everyone can use, but how do you start to make decisions in the face of uncertainty?
That's a great question. I think that's one of the tricky parts about moving from school into adulthood, that when you're in school, most questions have right answers, right? I mean, that's what school is all about.
Yeah.
Give me the right answer to all the questions. And so I think when you move into adulthood, I spend a lot of time in my office with, you know, very lovely young adults who want the right answer to which job should I take? Which person should I be with? Which city should I move to? And so I think, you know, part of moving into adulthood is realizing that most big decisions, most big questions don't have right or wrong answers. They just have your answers, meaning what's right or wrong for you. So a lot of what I help 20-somethings do is to start to reflect on that, which they haven't had to do up until now. Because remember, these are first jobs, first relationships, first moves, first big decisions, is to help them listen to what are their priorities, what are their values, what are their goals, and then to learn that, you know, we basically make the best decision that we can based on what we know, but that there will never be a right answer. The good news, there's never a wrong answer either.
Probably, to be fair, more likely that parents of 20-somethings are listening today than 20-somethings. And there are things that you say parents can do to help, like don't make things too easy for their children.
Yeah, I mean, I think people ask me questions a lot, like, should my 20-something live at home? And again, back to there's no right or wrong answer. My answer to that is it's not whether they live at home, it's how they live at home. So are they living at home as an adult, you know, in the home and sharing the labor, the cooking, the laundry, the bills, the circuit breaker, you know, when that goes out, are they sharing the load or are they living at home like a teenager where they're still sitting down for meals and having their laundry folded? That's not helpful to 20-somethings. It may or may not feel good in the moment, but it definitely does not help people feel more confident and more competent and more sure of themselves. That, you know, ultimately we can't make the world a certain place, but we can feel more sure of ourselves and our ability to get out there and create a life and have a job and be a friend and be a partner and find a partner. And we don't learn that sense of confidence and competence if other people keep doing things for us.
This is great stuff. Thank you. What do you mean when you say that 20-somethings are reassurance junkies?
Well, I think when people are faced with problems that don't have right answers, they want to know, is this the right way? Am I doing the right thing? Is this going to work out? And when we give young adults reassurance of yes, this is right. Yes, you're okay. Yes, you're doing the right thing. It's not really lasting. It's sort of like a short lasting drug that it makes people feel better for a minute, but then they just come back for more. So I often, instead of giving 20 somethings reassurance, I try to help them shore up their self-assurance. And I ask them, what feels right about this decision to you, and help them walk them through how they came to the decision that they made, or why they took this job in the first place, and sort of help them feel good within themselves instead of looking to other people for evidence.
Does that mean as parents we should refrain from saying things like, everything's going to be okay?
I think that, believe it or not, most 20-somethings don't find that to be useful. So I've heard many, many times over 25 years of doing this that it's actually frustrating to young adults when everybody says, oh, it's fine. It'll all work out. Yeah. You have all the time in the world. Like I said, maybe it works for a second, but it's not really satisfying, and it doesn't even satisfy them. And so I think rather than do that, what I do is I take 20-something concerns seriously, and I ask the person, well, what are you worried about? And let's see if we can take that up as a serious problem that we're trying to solve, rather than something that I'm just going to tell you it's going to be okay because time passes.
The last thing I wanted to mention is you encourage us to manage expectations and encourage 20-somethings to manage expectations as well, and to understand that how you feel today is not how you are always going to feel. Is it hard to get that message through?
No, actually, people are really relieved, which is why the 20-something treatment is really a book about good news. And it's a book that normalizes rather than pathologizes a lot of the struggles that 20-somethings are having. And it says, hey, these may not be the best years of your life. You don't need to panic about that. And the good news is that life, according to all the data, tends to get better as we age across 30s, 40s, and 50s. And, if you think about it, that's the way it should be. I say to my clients, if your 20s turn out to be the best years of your life, something went terribly wrong, that life should get better as you go.
I love that. And for people who have come in late, and skills, not pills, is sort of your mantra here, but can we agree that there are some people who have mental illness and mental health problems so severe that medication is a good idea in that moment?
Absolutely. Actually, my mantra, I'm gonna nitpick you here, Jesse, is skills, not just pills.
Uh-huh.
So meaning that, I say in the book very clearly that for some people, medication is useful and necessary, but even for people on medication, everybody, every young adult needs to work on skills, that there are no mental health disorders for which pills alone are all people need.
Good stuff. Real pleasure to talk to you. The book's called The 20-Something Treatment, A Revolutionary Remedy for an Uncertain Age. And my guest has been Dr. Meg Jay. Thank you, Meg.
Oh, it was a pleasure, Jesse.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.